and gentlemen, you are now listening to the Scare Blast podcast. And now here's your host, Lisa Burton.
Hey everybody, welcome to Scare Blast podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Burton, and today I am joined by actor, improviser, writer, Mr. CJ Tour. Hi, CJ.
Good evening.
And CJ has chosen the movie Psycho for us to watch. Alfred Hitchcock, 1960. Such a great movie. A classic thriller horror movie. Classic Alfred Hitchcock style. This movie is so great. CJ, let me ask you a couple questions.
All right.
First of all, do you like scary movies?
I do like scary movies.
Ooh.
A lot.
Okay. And what types of scary movies do you reach for when you reach for a scary movie to watch?
You know, I like all kinds. One of my favorite things about scary movies is there's a lot of independent stuff out there.
Yeah.
So you can get a wide menagerie.
Oh, yeah.
So I love, nowadays, I really do love to find those independent movies that are getting a lot of hype, that are taking horror in new directions.
Yeah.
When I came up, I watched mostly horror movies with my mom.
Yeah.
And that was a wide variety. She would, like, watch The Exorcist, and we'd watch, like, slasher films and stuff like that. So any type is great. I spent 3 years ago really looking into slasher films because I did an improvised slasher movie in theater. But I think my favorite, and it's going into what we're talking about, are the suspense, are the horror movies that really get into the human psyche and explain why bad people do bad things.
Totally. Yeah, that's great. And now you are in a show. Part of the reason that this Hitchcock movie is so exciting to talk about with you is because clearly you've done your research for Hitchcock Tales, which is an improvised show that you're doing right now. And I'll allow you to plug at the end of the show.
But I'll wait.
Yeah, that's great. But it's a but it's an improvised Hitchcock. So so I'm excited to talk to you about all things Hitchcockian once we get to the combo part of this. But for now, will you please summarize or give us a synopsis of Psycho?
Okay. Psycho, as you said, 1960, is a tale of people doing bad things who run into each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because we start with Marion Crane, a woman who steals money from her employer so she can get married.
Mm-hmm.
In her flight away from her hometown to her boyfriend, she stumbles upon the Bates Motel, where she meets Norman Bates, who is also a man who feels that he's caught in a bad situation, but he has taken a more violent solution to try and escape it.
Oof.
And in the end, we find out that he is not only his captive, the captive of the situation, but he is the person who is holding himself captive because he turns out to be his own overbearing, domineering, and murderous mother.
When a mother has to speak the words that condemn her own son, but I couldn't allow them to believe that I would commit murder. They'll put him away now, as I should have, years ago. He was always bad. And in the end, he intended to tell them I killed those girls and that man. As if I could do anything except just sit and stare, like one of his stuffed birds. Well, they know I can't even move a finger, and I won't. I'll just sit here and be quiet. Just in case they do suspect me. They're probably watching me. Well, let them. Let them see what kind of a person I am. I'm not even gonna swat that fly. I hope they are watching. They'll see. They'll see and they'll know. And they'll say, why, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
Holocene is possibly my favorite cinematic scene ever.
It's gorgeous. It's wonderful.
And like I said, one of the reasons is because it's switching protagonists on you secretly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I didn't think of it like that. Yeah.
Is because it's in the end of that scene where Marion comes to the conclusion that she's going to go back to Phoenix.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's in the inciting incident where, like, Norman decides mother decides she's going to kill her.
Yeah.
And it's while they're doing that, though, they're talking about, like, private travel, something. Like, I feel like it's the theme of the movie.
Yeah.
And so, like, they're both relating their problems, and they're transferring their problems from Marion to Norman.
Yeah.
And it works for both of them. But then it's like, the audience doesn't realize that. But then when you see Marion die, you don't feel dissatisfied.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of people could feel angry, like, they kill the protagonist. Like,
yeah.
But no, you know the end of her story, and now you're very worried about Norman.
Yeah.
And you're rooting for him now to cover up the murder of the woman you had been rooting for in the first.
Because when he's telling you his background, it's very, like, you know, my mom sort of abandoned me for this other person. And you really do start to feel really bad for him. He says the line, a son is a poor substitute for a lover.
Yeah.
Which is very, like, telling and also, I don't know, like, really sad. And I think that is the line. When I was thinking about this movie before I rewatched it, I had in my head that his mom sexually abused him. I think it was because of that line in the movie that I thought to myself, did she, like, did her, at some point, did she try and lay with Norman? Like, as a, I don't know that.
No, like, it's, and it's interesting. Like I said, it's a ton of backstory, and you can do the interpretation into it.
Yeah.
And it's like the origin of monsters, like how much of it is in their fault and how much of it is victim of terrible circumstances.
Yeah, totally.
I don't think I've ever gotten the impression that Norman's mother abused him.
Yeah.
At least not directly. Like, this gets into one thing fascinating about Psycho, and I would also go to some of the Hitchcock films like Vertigo or whatnot.
Yeah.
Hitchcock could very much put his own fears into movies, and it's just that kind of idea of, like, how do you scare an audience? Well, how do you scare yourself?
Yeah.
And he was afraid of birds, the police, his mother.
Yeah.
And it's all of that's in Psycho.
Yeah.
Because, like, the police, the no-eyed police officer that just stalks her, the birds, of course, and mother, and this gets into the second thing that I find fascinating about this in Vertigo, and Heights. But that's radio.
Yeah.
But is that Hitchcock, being a Hitchcock fan, is I myself have to have a dual personality. While I immensely respect the talent, he was kind of a sleazy guy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's one of those things where, like, he's a genius, but he is a creep.
Yeah.
But one thing I find fascinating is I think he's kind of aware of it.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like Vertigo and Psycho are very confessional films.
Yeah.
Because if you know anything about Hitchcock's history, is he became very obsessed with his leading ladies, especially Tippi Hedren, and he felt rejected by them. And then there's a thing of, people say that he likes to torture women on screen. I feel like he likes to torture everybody on screen. You could make the case, and absolutely, but yeah, he did terrible things to everybody who worked with him. But but it's that idea of, Norman Bates, I feel, is very much a confessional of Hitchcock, because he, too, had a very domineering mother.
Yeah.
And it's his catchbox of saying, it's not my fault I do these things, it's my mother's fault. But in the end, it is my fault.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and Vertigo is more the confessional of how he treats women and tries to control them and make them into something.
Yeah.
Like, make them the Hitchcock blonde. And it's, like I said, it gets to the idea of how can you do, which basically a narrative film artistically, and I feel like it is very confessional.
Yeah.
And it's acknowledging his own flaws, or at least deepens it a little. Or, you know, like I said, it was subconscious, it was conscious, I don't know, I can definitely read it, though.
What did you think of, like, the big last speech, like the big Freudian speech at the very
end? When I did it, like, before this, I'd read a few books on Hitchcock.
Yeah.
And, I would say I was one credit shy of a film minor. I took a lot of film classes whenever I could.
Cool.
And when we study Hitchcock, one thing they say is that Hitchcock doesn't know how to end his movies. Like, it's just that idea of that, like, he builds to a very huge climax. And then either just gives a quick joke for the denouement of a North by Northwest. Or a protracted, like, over-explanation of what came before.
Which is what happened here.
He leans towards the joke. And ever since I've read that, I always feel like he just hits the climax, and then he's just out as fast as possible. Yeah. Like, a nice, usually a happy ending, too, but it usually ends on some kind of joke. Psycho has the psychiatrist scene, which, this is such a personal thing, but I love. Like, I love heavy exposition scenes in movies when I care.
Yeah.
Like, when I don't care, exposition scenes are the worst.
Totally.
But, like, a good exposition scene, now, I feel Hitchcock's best exposition scene is Dialing for Murder at the beginning of that. But this is exposition at the end, which is such a weird place for an exposition scene. And that psychiatrist loves his job so much. He does not care about the feelings of the people around him.
Nope, he's like, well, your friend died, but let me tell you why. Like,
did he kill my sister? Yes. And no. Like, don't. What are you doing?
Yeah.
It's just like, I don't know. It's actually, Hitchcock often says that he directed this movie as a comedy.
Oh.
And you can read that in that scene. And there's a few scenes you can read that in. And there's a difference between directing like a comedy and like actually being a comedy.
Right, right.
But letting like a character like that just go for the exposition is, I don't know, I find it kind of fantastic.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, it was long.
It was. I understand it's long.
Yeah.
And it's like one of those things of, if it had been made today, there's no need for that because we understand the trope.
Yeah.
But I feel if this is the first time you're doing the dual personality bit, maybe that's why they needed to repeat the fact so often.
Sure, yeah.
I don't know, but you're right. And it's not the end of the film. The end of the film is the final monologue from Mother with Norman, which is fantastic.
Oh, it's so good.
Which is, so, I don't know.
Yeah, let's get there. So, Norman, through the whole movie, there's this question with Norman of, like, could he hurt someone?
Right.
Could he or his mother hurt someone? Mm-hmm. Could they hurt someone? And at the very end, they've got Norman dressed as Norman, who has asked for a blanket because he's cold. Mm-hmm. So he's wrapped in this blanket with it around his head like a shroud, like a looks like a babushka type thing. And he's sitting there in the chair, and there is a fly on his hand. And the line that struck me, and tell me if there are other lines here that are more like more important to you, but the line that struck me is just the line where he says, I'm not even going to swat that fly. I'm going to show them that I couldn't, I'm just a little old lady and I couldn't even hurt a fly, which I thought was so crazy. It's crazy person logic.
Yeah.
That he's already committed the murder. She has already committed the murder. And now she's going to show the world that she's harmless.
Which gets into the argument of how much of this is Mother's fault and how much of this is Norman's fault.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's like, you could do the Hitchcock thing of, is this Hitchcock admitting that no, the mother is not responsible for the murders? She couldn't hurt a fly. It was Norman. So is that Hitchcock admitting, no, I can't blame my sins on my mother. They're my fault.
Yeah.
Or is it like you said, that the mother's much worse than we imagined?
Yeah.
That she's abusive?
Yeah, yeah.
And she hides it.
Yeah.
And so the mother personality is, like, cunning.
Yeah.
And, like, deceptive.
Yeah.
Like, right there you could read into how much is whose fault.
Yeah, here's what I would argue. I think that Norman's version of his mother is not his mother.
Right.
I mean, it's not the real mother, right? So I think Norman's version of his mother is the cunning sly.
You think so,
I think Norman has siphoned all of his negative energy into that other. The way that since that movie, it's been talked about in subsequent films that when people have a split personality, when people have schizophrenia on film, it's always where it's divided, and oftentimes one personality has a lot of one emotion, and another personality has a lot of a different emotion. So that it creates these separate personalities that are driven by different points of view and different reasons for doing them. So I do think that in this case, to me, it's Mother being cunning, and it's that creepy. I mean, that character is creepy. I don't think Norman Bates is a threat. I think that Norman as his mother that he's created is the threat and the murderer.
Well, I was actually going to your theory that if his mother sexually abused him.
Yeah.
It's that idea of, well, abusers will hide their intent. You know, so like the idea of like, I won't even swat this fly would be indication that his mother was an abuser and was good at hiding her crimes.
Yeah, totally. Was
it not necessarily a reading I would take, but I totally understand it.
Yeah, so... Yeah, that's the reading that I will take. Yeah, I loved it. This movie is just so, so good. What is your favorite Alfred Hitchcock film?
It's this one. I know it's my second favorite is Strangers on a Train.
Okay, I don't think I've seen it.
Yeah, and which gets into the idea, here's a big Hitchcock theme that is present in Psycho and a little bit in Strangers, is the idea of guilt.
Yeah.
Is that innocent people are guilty.
Uh-huh.
Now... guilt is fascinating in Psycho because Marion Crane is guilty, but she's a good person. She decides to go back. She's very guilty, but it sways all of her decision and eventually gets her killed.
Yeah,
maybe
yeah.
Like I really don't want to take the typical slasher interpretation that she's killed for being a sexual woman.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Sam's also sexual and he doesn't get killed. You know what I'm saying? Like I feel it's more that she's killed because she's guilty because guilt's the big theme here.
Yeah,
and Norman is very guilty for Mother, but not for himself. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's... he wants to cover up and protect her. And it's very interesting. And I'll take that to Strangers on a Train, where we have a man who's wrongly accused mm-hmm. for a crime.
Yeah.
But he's married and seeing another woman.
Mm-hmm.
And he has guilt about that.
Yeah.
And, like, he's being punished for that. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's a theme in Hitchcock films, is people's guilt over something.
Yeah.
Is usually a minor matter. Gets them in worse trouble.
Yeah, totally.
And, And it is very much on display here in Psycho. It's in that.
All characters here, too. Yeah. Where it's like the, even the sister and Sam Loomis, the boyfriend, right. both of them kind of get themselves in a little over their head because they feel guilty about whatever they feel. I mean, they also feel shame and guilt.
And they won't go to the police.
Right, they won't go to the police.
Because they feel guilty that she stole the money and they don't want her to get in trouble.
Yeah.
It's like they're protecting her the way Norman's protecting Mother.
Right. Yeah.
She's committed a crime and they want to cover it up.
Yeah. Also, okay, so I have a question.
Yes.
Do you think that, so the sheriff's wife talks about having picked out Mother's blue dress.
Right.
Did Norman go dig up his mother?
Yeah.
Okay.
The way the coffin was buried.
Okay, cool.
So he probably got her right before the burial.
Okay.
I would imagine, if they say the way the coffin was buried,
mm-hmm.
but I imagine he got her right before the burial.
Okay, cool.
They said he stole her body. So it indicates he took it from somewhere.
Yeah, got it. I just didn't catch that in this watch through. All I caught was that the sheriff's wife, like, made a big fucking deal about this blue dress. Right. So she was like,
I mean, that's a big trope.
Yeah,
we love to play in Hitchcock tales. It's just the most fascinating of side characters.
Yeah,
like there's the car salesman who's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. He's so good.
And
yeah, and the sort of argument they have back and forth, where the car salesman is actually a pretty good guy.
Right.
He's like not
but
your
she's
standard.
So guilty.
Yeah, he's not your standard like shitty car salesman who's gonna. He's like, no, why don't you take a couple days to think about what car you're gonna get? And she's like, nope, I need it right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. In stabs. If you give you could give it 10 stabs or 1 stab out of 10.
I gotta tell you, I give it 10 stabs.
Yeah.
It's my favorite horror movie. It was one of my favorite movies. It's fantastic.
Yep.
And it does everything I want a horror movie to do.
Yeah.
It, you know, makes me sympathize and hate a monster.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, I think it's fantastic.
I have a few trivia questions.
Okay.
Number one. This story is based on a book.
Right.
Who's the author?
Robert Bloch.
Robert Bloch. And Robert Bloch based this story on another serial killer, a famous serial killer, who really only killed a few women, but dug up a lot of bodies.
Yeah.
Who was that serial killer?
Ed Gein.
Ed Gein. Ding, 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 ding. Ed Gein, who dug up a bunch of bodies and made a bunch of furniture out of those bodies.
Yep.
And like a trash can of skin and leggings.
He's a good guy, man.
Real fucking weird Wisconsinian dude. All right. Number two. The film was top secret when it was being made. And a journalist tried to leak the title, but leaked the wrong title, prompting a bunch of rumors about what the movie could be about. Do you know what the title that was leaked was?
Oh, you know, I don't know this.
The title that was leaked was Psyche.
Oh.
So a journalist leaked Psyche, leading to a bunch of rumors that the movie was about a Greek tragedy of some kind.
Oh.
Yeah.
Great.
So it was like a totally different movie that
people
thought was coming out.
Wow, you gave me a bit of trivia I did not know.
Yeah. Wow. All right. When Lila sneaks into Norman's mother's / Norman's sitting area, or rather Norman's room is what this is, she notices a record in the record player. Do you know what record is in the record player?
It's Beethoven.
Beethoven's...
I swear I could just remember this.
Or do you happen to know the background of this record either?
No, I don't. I just know it's Beethoven.
Now, this was a really cool tidbit that I just stumbled across.
Okay.
And a really great detail and a way, a really neat sort of foreshadowing of the whole thing unraveling at this point. It's Beethoven's Eroica. And after doing a little bit of digging, Beethoven's Eroica is the piece that struck the new path in Beethoven's career. So it's right when Beethoven was like 27, when he was losing his hearing, and when he like shed all of the teachings that he knew about music and just struck his own path.
Yeah.
So basically it was Beethoven's shift,
oh.
which I thought was such a neat, like detailed... foreshadowing to the shift that we were seeing in Norman, that he was listening to Beethoven's Eroica, which was, again, like a different piece than Beethoven had done before, which is really neat. Okay, how many edits does the shower scene have?
73.
So I found 70, but okay. Right, early 70s.
Yeah.
In 45 seconds.
Yeah.
Which is so many fucking cuts. And it's the number one studied scene in film schools.
There was there's a modern art exhibit that slowed it down. They had 24 hours of Psycho, where they slowed the movie down to 24 hours.
Whoa.
And like the point, well, the other than to like look at how much detail went into every shot, it was still like during, like at a point in premiere when everybody was there, they would all be in the shower sequence for like an hour.
Wow.
You know, like
That would have been really interesting. That's really interesting just to take that scene, that 45 second scene, right, and stretch it out and just look.
Yeah.
One last question. So Marion drives a 1957 Ford sedan. And do you know the little tidbit of trivia that goes along with that little sedan? What other TV show that is from?
No.
That is the Ford sedan. It's the Leave It to Beaver car. It's a family car. Because they were on the same set, apparently. You know, they shared a bunch of...
This isn't an official trivia question, but I do know this about sharing sets.
Yeah.
The house, the very creepy house.
Yeah.
Do you know what movie it was used in before that?
Can I guess?
Yeah.
Was it like the Addams Family or the Munsters? No. Go ahead.
Harvey.
Whoa!
Yeah, it's just an old house, so they just kind of like filmed it from an unflattering angle, and but it was
that's funny.
Yeah,
cool.
They used a few sets from Harvey, apparently.
Huh.
So that's neat. Here's my official question.
Okay.
All right. Psycho was the first film to show this bathroom activity.
Ooh. Shower?
No.
What was it?
A toilet flushing.
Heyo! Yep. That's interesting.
Like,
where she flushes down the,
the script,
torn up.
The writer of the script actually wanted it to show like the pure functionality of a bathroom to really highlight it as a scene for the murder.
Yeah.
And so Hitchcock told him that he had to make the toilet flushing part of the plot in order to get it there, which is the whole reason for her writing it down, tearing it up, and her finding the clue in the motel.
Yeah, well, Sam Loomis finding that bit. Okay. That's interesting.
Speaking of Sam Loomis.
Okay.
What other very classic horror film uses the name Sam Loomis?
Yeah, I knew I recognized that name.
Yep.
I didn't know why I recognized it. Yep. Why do I recognize
it? Very classic.
It's from Rosemary's Baby.
No, I don't know. Halloween.
Oh,
Dr.
good.
Loomis.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
That's great.
And this is a side one.
Okay.
There is a slasher film.
Uh-huh.
Where all of the characters are named after Hitchcock characters. And Sam Loomis shows up again.
Okay.
But it's not as famous as Halloween. It's a 90s slasher film. I'll give you that hint.
Okay. Gosh. I don't even know if I've seen many 90s slasher films. Are not my favorite. But
I understand.
Let me see if I can suss it out.
Okay.
I'm going to go ahead and guess it is Urban Legend.
It is Urban Legend.
Yes! Guess!
Yes!
Yes! Yes! Yes!
And actually in Urban Legend 2, they do a huge Hitchcock, like, motif behind them because they're film school students.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, it's not... I'm not recommending Urban Legend or Urban Legend 2, but the production crews besides those movies are huge Hitchcock fans.
Oh, that's really cool.
And yeah, I'm giving you... I'm trying to theme my questions around horror movies in general.
Yeah.
So I feel bad because my next one is also slasher.
Okay,
slasher
that's film. Okay. That's okay. That's
what great. What slasher film also had its killer, quote the line, "We all go a little mad sometimes."
Yep. Scream?
Yeah, Scream.
Yeah. I just watched that one.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And finally, if Hitchcock had a hard time finding this movie, they did not like how murdery it was, how gory it was, how violent. If he had not succeeded to fund it as a film, what would Hitchcock have done with Psycho?
If not a film?
If not a film.
What would you do with something that you had that wasn't a radio play?
Close. He was going to cut it up into three parts as part of his television show.
Hey, yeah, of course. That's great.
Yeah.
There were a lot of great directors and stuff that worked on
absolutely.
Hitchcock.
And, like, he did a few, and he does do that once. He does do a three-part episode that could have been a Hitchcock movie. Mm-hmm. Although I think put together would only have been an hour.
Yeah.
But, and, like, had Psycho not gone through, it would have filled that time scene.
CJ, this has been so much fun and so informative. CJ, if we were to see you around town, it is late October.
It is late
October. And moving into November now.
Okay.
Where will we see you or where can we find you?
Well, luckily, my horror is not contained within October. For year-round, I perform at the Annoyance Theater at Hitchcocktails. Hitchcocktails, we do an improvised Hitchcock thriller. Sometimes psycho-ish, but always crime and alcohol-fueled, where we drink on stage like the classiest of Hitchcock heroes who are consistently drinking brandy as they discuss the finer points of crime. And yes, it's every Friday at 10 o'clock. It's me and a bunch of wonderful people. We alternate our cast a little bit, so I'm not going to say who for fear that you go really excited to see them and they're not there. But it's, yeah, every week, and... yeah, hope to see you there.
Yay, thanks so much. Thank you.